It's time to go full speed ahead with Michael Kelly. Each week, we take you inside all the big sports stories at USF from the perspective of the man who oversees the program, Vice President of Athletics, Michael Kelly. With today's show, here's your host, Derek Sharp.
Well, on this episode, we might spend a few minutes talking about the end of the conference tournament, but still basketball to play for Amir Abdulrahim and the men's team with Michael Kelly, but we got a lot more to get to. Unreal stuff from women's golf, women's tennis, track and field, so much to get to, and I know it sounds like a broken record, but in this case, it truly is the case. But Michael, as we meet up via Microsoft Teams, I know you're probably been up and down and all around, but mostly in Fort Worth lately. What was your overall view of what happened there? We know that the game didn't end well when the Bulls left the court, but what an experience.
Yeah, obviously spent an entire week in Fort Worth, a combination of both the men's and women's tournament and the handful of conference meetings that took place in the middle of the week. So it was, I think you and I had our first podcast from half court, from mid court at a halftime of a women's basketball game. But the, you know, obviously when we talk about the men, I know we were all really hoping we could pull out the tournament victory championship just as we did in the regular season. And, you know, it played so extremely well in the opening game that we played against East Carolina. And unfortunately just, a battle of attrition on Saturday against UAB, who I think is a really, really good team. You know, they're tough. They play hard, and between a handful of guys being out and just them, you know, just being a tough out, we just came up a little short. So I know people are disappointed we didn't get into the NCAA, but we can't stop looking at the very positive things and the progress that we made, and grateful for the chance. The opportunity to get in the NIT. It's been a number of years, over 10 years since we've done that, and this is another step forward in our evolution. So let's all savor and respect the accomplishment of the regular season title, and let's go out and understand this is another great accomplishment, and it's just going to keep us going and keep us motivated for next year to bring more fans into the base and to keep building up our program. It's kind of, you alluded to a national conversation. I mean, obviously you've got the situation where 68 team tournament, and I put a tweet out this morning that some people agree with and some people don't. That's okay. I'm just speaking my opinion on this. And I think, as we talked about in the summer edition of Bull Speed Ahead, the NCAA as a whole has been looking at championships to see, like, hey, what's the right percentage of teams that play a certain sport and how many have access to the championship. And in the sport of basketball, you know, there D1 basketball, there's currently 362 teams for the 68 spots that we have. And at the time the 68 team bracket was first established, that we've all come to know and love and appreciate, there were only 282 teams. Wow. In Division I at that time. So when you think you add 80 teams and you're still fighting for that, and again, this is not genuinely not sour grapes at all. I respect everyone that's in the tournament. I respect the opportunity to be in the NIT this year, but I just have pretty good insight and really believe that if there are 80 teams this year, that not only us, but a handful of other well-deserving teams would be in there. And I don't see what the harm in that would be. I know we're traditionalists. I'm as much of a basketball purist as there is. I love the NCAA tournament. I love having everybody in. I think there should still be automatic qualifiers as we have.
I agree.
But when you come back to, you know, even if they went to, let's say, 80, I know it's being proposed by some folks that, you know, I just happen to agree with, that would get us at about 22% of all teams would have access to the championship. And I don't find that to be an unusual percentage. I think it's a reasonable percentage. Can't think of any other sport really that has, you know, that little of a chance to get in the postseason when you think about pro sports and other things. So I hope it's something that continues to be discussed. I also think the net as a tool, and I know it's not the be-all, end-all for the committee. It's just a tool that they use. But it's clearly one they look at quite a bit, and there does seem to be things that, I'm not an expert enough to know exactly how to change it, but hearing from coaches all over the country from all perspectives, it does seem to be really an enigma and how to adjust to it and how to play to it. And part of it's building a better non-conference schedule, and we know that, and we will do that. But again, some of it, when I compare our resumes to others, see that drastic of a change in the net, it doesn't seem to add up to me, and it's not just me, obviously, I think. So again, there must be tweaks or things that we could all, the committee can look at and see if there's things that can happen, and then continue discussion about potential expansion. And we'll see. I just think it's worthy dialogue, something that should happen. And I would say that if my team was not even right. thought about, or if my team was on the precipice as we were this year. So hopefully that'll be some healthy dialogue that, again, there might be various opinions. Some people might think I'm nuts to suggest that, but I do think, again, just the fairness of a percentage of teams having access seems to be very logical to me.
A couple things, and I echo what you say. First of all, I get the people that are against expansion, but my philosophy is most people care more about their bracket than the playoff system and who gets in. So they don't really care. They just want their bracket. But if you actually care about the sport, and the guy in your position obviously does, and I do, I've cared about this, and I've wanted an expansion for years. You know, I was freaking out about North Texas not getting in last year, and Liberty not having a chance. So this is way before the Bulls became involved in the situation. Secondly, you mentioned the math involved. I'm looking at the NBA. More than half the teams get in the playoffs. Not even near half is what we're talking about with the college number. And I even, and here's the NBA precedent, you're going to actually have, what, in each conference, four teams play in to try and get those last two spots. I would be a fan of a play-in system where, you know, every conference gets, including conference champs automatically, maybe to play in for a spot. Something like that where there's more access. It's not about letting more, you know, 500 teams in. It's about actually giving teams access. And I would argue against people that say you expand the field, it would make the regular season meaningless. Right now, what meaning did the regular season have for Indiana State? They won the championship, they were a top 30 team, and what did it mean? Nothing, because they had to win their conference tournament. And I think that angle is unfair. It's not about bringing in too many teams. It's about responding to how much quality there is in this game. Year after year, it's been proven that conference after conference cannot just compete with the big leagues, but can beat them. And yet, year after year, they have access, but they only have one point of access winning their conference tournament. I think that's unfair.
Right, and you make some good points. And it doesn't. There's a lot of ways to potentially get there, and you point out some really cool concepts that are done at the pro levels of various sports, and that should be explored. And I've seen everyone, you know, certainly at the one of the leaders in the conference world with Greg Sankey at the SEC. I know he seems to be a proponent of it, but he's also very careful to say, hey, it might be very much be in their conference's best interest. But he's also saying times have changed, whether he means it totally on his prism or not. It's like you do have to evaluate from time to time when changes happen. And I'm just suggesting when 80 new teams at that level right. have joined, it might be time to look at an increase. Or, as we all know, there's a lot of discussions about what D1 will look like. And if D1 changes sure. and there's less teams in D1, then maybe this tournament size is fine, or maybe it needs to get smaller. I don't know. But if it stays the way it is right now, I just feel that and even though I'm a proponent of that expansion, you know, some of even my peers in the American and others would say, hey, I don't know if that's a great idea, because that's just going to give more spots to maybe the Power 4 or the Power 2, which may be. But I still just think it kind of at least opens up the possibility. If you're going to still keep AQs in there, which I happen to be a proponent of continuing, then I still think you need a little more wiggle room. I'm not suggesting going to 50%. I'm not suggesting going to 30%. But somehow when you get into the 22% range, how does that measure up? And you see some teams when they look at the NIT standpoint, and we're very proud to be in it. It's been a while, as I mentioned. So it's a good step forward for us. But if they change that, and I put something out there today, too, that, again, I haven't given a lot of thought to, but even to the point now that the NCAA manages both the NCAA tournament and the NIT, if you did expand to whatever number was considered appropriate by the membership, you know, maybe there's not an NIT. I don't know, but I would, you know, I dare say, as proud as I am to be in the NIT, if I was in the NCAA and there was no NIT, I'd be good with that, you know. And when you look at even in our league right now, last year, and North Texas and UAB went all the way to the finals, and North Texas won that last year. And when I brought it up in our conference meetings and talked to them, I asked them point blank, would you guys who went all the way to the finals have rather been in the NCAA, or would you rather go in the NIT? And they both say without question, being in the NCAA. So again, this is just something I know it's being discussed already. So it's just kind of me just putting my voice out there with it, but it's just something that I really think needs to be looked at. And again, even there's a lot of people that don't want it. But I think when you look at those numbers, it's just, it would help the power conferences, but I still genuinely believe it would allow us to maintain the traditional nature of keeping the AQs, but also giving a little bit more breathing room to the committee, because everyone loves to complain about the committee.
They had an impossible job.
I never tend to do that, because I know that these folks are trying their best and they have guidelines they have to follow. And if they had a little bit more of a release valve, that there was a few more spots there, I'm sure they would appreciate it. And again, there's some deserving teams out there that probably should be there. Not a critique of the committee, just I think should be in there as we make adjustments in the years going forward.
And it's not like this year they would have had to hold their nose and close their eyes and pick a team. They would, like you say, release valve because they were all great teams. And I think that's the whole point. As far as I want to ask people, you know, just to not play devil's advocate, but to anticipate what people might be thinking, not about the expansion, but about the Bulls not getting in. And you mentioned the schedule. First of all, when does the schedule get set in stone? Because in my memory and recollection, it was before Mir Abdur-Rahim had a team. So it would have been very difficult to say, let's play Kansas, Kentucky, and whoever else. And secondly, it really is important who you do schedule because I'm looking at, again, the net. And FAU was in an 8-9 game, so they were clearly in the field because of their schedule, non-conference. Right. Obviously, in the conference, that team that is quote-unquote better than the Bulls, A, lost to them, and B, was behind them by two games in the standings. So clearly, the Bulls are right on par, if not a notch above FAU, but their scheduling got them in.
Yeah, it did, and kudos to them, and that's something that we'll obviously continue to do in the future as well. You have to find, at the time Amir got here, there was already a couple games that were already committed to. So there wasn't a lot of flexibility left to go schedule. So there's still a lot of games we have to schedule for next year, and we'll be able to do that. But it's also, I have to tell you, it's hard because of some of the power conferences. They're boxed in a little bit too, because they, you know, for instance, the ACC plays 20 conference games. So if I'm in their shoes, I realize that, wow, I only have so many I can schedule. I want to play in some of these MTEs, and I need to buy some games that I want to have at home. So they really don't, in fairness to them, they don't have a lot of wiggle room to do home and homes with us or anybody else. There's a handful, and that's why we are grateful and do play Florida and or Florida State frequently down at the Orange Bowl Classic, because they don't want to give up a home and home, but they're willing to go play us in a game there where it's only taking up one of their spots, because they don't have many non-conference games. So all of us have to, you know, design our non-conference schedule appropriately, and it's very similar. What we'll have to do in men's basketball is not that dissimilar from what Jose does on the women's basketball side. He knows that we schedule to win. Our goal is always to win the conference championship and the conference tournament, to go ahead and get that automatic. But in the case that we don't get that done, obviously Jose knows that and is scheduled accordingly to make sure when we at least have the opportunity to get our the net or the strength of schedule up to a certain point, and gives you some opportunities for some, as they say, quad one wins, which is what you want to shoot for. In this particular year in women's basketball, we didn't get any of the wins in those games like we normally do, and that obviously was the end of kind of hurt us when we weren't able to pull it off. And the fairness to Coach Abdur-Rahim, by the time he got on board, a lot of schedules were already in place, and so there was only so much that we could do. But next year, I'm highly confident we can get a few more games. I'm sure we'll play in some sort of MTE, a multi-team event, that'll give us a couple more other marquee games that'll give us an opportunity to not only get some key wins, but to get that strength of schedule. So people just have to understand that's just part of it, and one of the next steps that we'll do in the off season.
Excellently put. And now one final question that I'm sure is on everybody's mind, and while I was expecting a war on I-4, if we're still calling that, it's a battle against UCF in the NIT, if they were going to make it, which they did. But a lot of people, in colorful language, immediately wondered, why are we not at home? Could you explain the situation?
Yeah, and really great questions. I understand the frustration because I share it. But in fairness, again, I think we talked about it on a summer episode when the NCAA basically changed the guidelines for the NIT this year. And basically, of the 32 teams that make it, they basically boxed in an automatic 12 of them to instead of in the past, it was always every conference, all 32 conferences, basically, if their regular season champion did not win the automatic qualifier for the NCAA by winning their tournament, then they were acknowledged as a credible team and put them in the NIT. They changed that a little bit by making sure that at least 12 of the spots were the top two net rated teams in what they termed as the Power Six, which they included the Power Five, and also included the Big East from their perspective of their success in recent basketball tournaments. So that was an automatic 12 spots, and those 12 spots would host. So that really only leaves four other spots for those not in those conferences to have been able to host an NIT game. Based on our seeding, playing a number four seeded team right now, it looks like obviously we were very close to that and high consideration. And And I dare say that it appears that, you know, Oklahoma would have been a higher seeded team in the Big 12 than UCF, and they probably would have. But when they declined to play, it shifted that down. And because of that affiliation, it gave UCF one of those opportunities to host. And that just so happened, it made a lot of sense for us regionally to do that. So that's just kind of the way the chips fell this time. And I don't blame the committee. That was the regulations they were provided. But at the heart of it, still, you know, unique opportunity to play, play somebody so close, and someone obviously that we've had a lot of great rivalry and certainly a lot of great wins, even as recently as last year.
So is it a round by round thing? If the P6, as you mentioned, automatic hosts get knocked off, where the Bulls could host another game at the Yuengling Center possibly this year?
Yeah, great question. We bid when the NIT put it out there, like we bid for any round that we could possibly host as a possibility. We cleared the schedule, held the Yuengling Center as a possibility. So we're prepared to do that. And looking at the bracket as it is right now, if we were to be successful against UCF, then we play the winner of Villanova and VCU. Clearly, if Villanova wins, we would go there. If VCU would win, we're seeking clarification on that as we speak. I'm wondering, because we put in and because it seems like we would be somewhat seated higher than VCU, that we would have a chance to host because they're playing a one seed as opposed to, you know, playing a four seed like we are. But I don't know. My understanding is officially they don't
seed specifically.
They don't seed beyond the top four. But okay. So we're waiting for clarification from the NCAA. But we are hopeful that we could host that scenario popped up. We're certainly able to, and we would hope that would come our way. So stay tuned. Yeah. If we're successful, we will obviously put information out as soon as possible if they have the possibility of hosting the second round. If we win the second round, then all the final games after that are all held at Hinkle Fieldhouse up in Indianapolis. So there's really only the first two rounds to have a chance to play in a home arena.
And boy, it would be something if the Bulls could get there, because that is a historic building. And only I, while you were talking about Villanova and VCU, would have something flash through my head and just confirm it on my laptop, that Villanova and VCU are also playing in the first round at the WBIT. So what a rivalry is being created all over the place. I know. I'm sick. I know what
they're playing in both tournaments.
Yeah. And I know the
CD. And I noticed how Nebraska
and Texas A&M
are playing in both tournaments here, I think. And their AD just switched from Nebraska to Texas A&M, so it's fascinating.
And next you're going to tell me, you know, the Chicago State men's basketball story in the CBI, but we'll save that for another podcast. just a lot of fun stuff, of course, happening this time of year, and I hope that a lot of fans can get over there on Tuesday night.
But ultimately, I just want to say, hey, we appreciate our fans. Man, what a great year. We got to still keep an eye on that. Sellout crowds, great student involvement. Awesome team, regular season title. Let's not lose sight of because of our disappointment with this. We're frustrated. We're going to keep looking for ways to change and encourage the NCAA to change. But hey, we were right there. We had to take care of some business, and we're going to keep taking care of business moving forward with coach and our great players and staff.
I'm calling it right now. It'll be USF against USF in Hinkle Fieldhouse, San Francisco against South Florida.
Okay.
We'll take
Why not?
That.
We all get confused enough anyway, so we might as well play. That would blow people's mind.
That'll be wonderful. So a lot of basketball, obviously, that we just chatted up on, and now it was just incredible because Saturday was, we alluded to, a disappointing ending for the men's basketball team in Fort Worth, but so much had happened already that was of a positive nature during the weekend. And then it kept building. And then on Sunday, and I'm calling the baseball action and keeping an eye on the golf scores out in Arizona, and not just a win. We've seen the women's golf team win twice already this fall and spring. But this was massive because they had a tough tournament the week before, and they go right back out to Arizona. And you're talking about loads of ranked teams, highly ranked teams, and just to bounce back and finish somewhere near the top of the leaderboard would have been good. But they won the thing, and they won it going away.
Yeah, I'm so proud because they were disappointed, although a good performance the week before, not great to their standard they've been recently. And to come right back against probably the most talented field we've really played in a tournament in quite some time in the history of the program, and to go ahead and win with a minus 16 overall, beating teams like the Texas A&M, Houston, Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, Oklahoma, you name it, just a lot of powerhouse programs that we were able to upend, and for Melanie Green to win another individual title And as you said, I think in history, we've only won, the most we've ever won is 4 in one season. So we're at 3 now and still a handful of tournaments and obviously the conference tournament to go. So we're so proud of our women's golf team. They're playing, you know, much like our basketball team, play so well together. And team golf, obviously, people have to all step up to make sure the team score is where it needs to be. And, right. and obviously, they're all doing their part. And then when you have a player that's just playing an elite level right now in Melanie Green, it's exciting to see. She has her whole career, but she's just getting better and better, and I'm so happy for her as well.
They were up 4 after the first round, then tied at 5-under going into the last round, and then midway through the last round, it was Bulls and Texas A&M 12-under. Iowa State had surged up but fallen off. Houston was a shot behind, and the finals end up going USF 16-under, A&M 12-under, Houston 4-under, and the 6th-ranked team in the country, Arkansas, back at 1-under. But you mentioned the team aspect of it, and if, for people that don't know, you have 5 golfers, your quote-unquote starting lineup, and each round you drop 1 score, the worst score. Well, after her score did not count in the first round, Alyssa Montgomery, who's a transfer, went 4-under in the final round, and MG went 6-under. So that's how they blew it out, and that's what I love about that team. You talk about it all the time, you know, everyone pulling each other's weight, but in golf, it really kind of comes through, and they only had one golfer actually finish in the top 15. Of course, she won the whole thing, but that shows you how everyone kind of got their part done when they needed to.
Yeah, that's why I use the kind of that basketball analogy when we've had some really good success this year, that you didn't rely on the same person every game to be that top scorer, and everyone always kind of steps up when their opportunity comes. And yeah, well, we've got a great consistent performer here and there, but someone different on this women's golf team has stepped up, and not only in tournament to tournament, but as you said, even in between rounds, to have Emma step up like that is huge.
Also, that was going on this weekend, again, a lot of positives. The win for women's tennis, they were playing their last home match of the season this weekend. They knocked off 40th-ranked Yale, and this is not just, hey, they're getting some good wins. They are going from a team that, you know, frankly, has had good moments, but is working its way up onto the bubble as far as NCAA inclusion. And it's been a wonderful story for Christina Morris. They lost their top player, transferred. It happens all over the place. I realize that. But bringing in some newcomers and just coming together at the end of the year here.
No question. I'm so happy for Christina and the team because you're right. She was, when she and I talked in the off season, there was a lot of changeover and certainly knew we were going to be able to rely on Grace to be a steady performer, but to put the rest of the team together and to now see this last month in particular of really consistent performances and beating a handful of highly ranked teams, including, you know, like you said, Yale yesterday this weekend is huge. So, yeah, again, right there in the throes of tournament contention, and certainly can take care of a lot of business by in our own conference tournament if we get focused. So peaking at the right time, proud of her and proud of the squad for overcoming so many things as we get ready for conference tournament time.
Couldn't quite hear the yells from where I was at the baseball stadium, but could sort of sense the vibe, and then was trying to bend my ear to hear what was going on at track and field. Couldn't quite get it that far, but I know that there was a lot happening over there. And the Bulls, and again, this was like the women's golf team. It wasn't just an average field. These were power conference schools all up and down the track in this case, and the Bulls almost swept the relays, the big events, the 2 4x1s and the 2 4x4s. They won 3 of the 4 and finished 2nd in the other. Another phenomenal showing.
Yep, we can't say enough about Coach Jenkins and his program continuing to elevate each and every outing. And as the outdoor season starts to heat up now, we've continued the momentum from indoor and getting ready for outdoor. And talking to Coach this morning, he was obviously proud of the team's performance, but then also just very appreciative of the staff running a great meet. Obviously, as we, you know, the investment we've made in the track facility, new video boards, improved graphics, the new track we put in a year ago. You know, all this is paying dividends not only for our program, but a key part of his vision for the future is to be able to host meets frequently. And how does that get more? And even for high school level folks, for local kids to see the elevation of our program, the elevation of our facility, and then obviously to attract other major programs to come here to Tampa to play it, to compete at our track is great. It allows a great recruiting tool for coaches to say, hey, we bring the best right here. They respect our program. They like our facility, and wouldn't you want to be a Bull for the future? So pleased to see investments paying off and great leadership by Coach Jenkins and his staff.
And as we wrap it up, baseball starts off conference play this week. they're in a good spot as far as the computer rankings. I want to mention softball because, yeah, they're off to a 2-4 start in conference, but they play two excellent teams. And you look at the new RPI, and the Bulls are in the top 50 along with the two teams they played. There is a big opportunity to not have to worry about winning the AAC because I think it's going to be a 3 and maybe 4 bid league. But I also want to say congratulations to the grounds crew because after being at home, I think, for the first 7 weeks of the season, and I was looking at those patches of dead grass in left, center, and right field, and sure enough, they were resodded this weekend. So even when softball's away, people are hard at work.
No doubt. I love our staff. They work so hard. They love to serve our student athletes and give them the best competitive fields and facilities to compete in. And you're right. You can make things look a lot better when you stay off them for a couple of days. And it's amazing, honestly, how fast stuff grows back, even when we're in the middle of soccer season or lacrosse practice, or as you mentioned, baseball and softball. Those the little rain and little attention and not running on them every day helps a great deal. So it looks great, and our football practice fields are looking great as they hit the throws, the heavy part of our last 13 practices to come here for the spring. So they're back from spring break, ready to hit it again on Tuesday morning and get ready for that spring game in mid-April.
As far as the softball field, just imagine what Wimbledon looks like on the service line after 2 weeks, and that's what was going on there. And now imagine at the beginning of the tournament. And thanks for the reminder on spring football, because in the back of my mind I'm thinking, what sport have I not been at in a while? Oh, yeah, that's it. So we'll be out there, and of course we'll be watching the War and I-4 on Tuesday. I imagine you'll be making a trip over there, and we'll have a lot more to talk about next week, Michael.
We will. Definitely looking forward to our trip to Orlando, and look forward to next week's edition. So thanks to Bulls Nation. Let's get out there and support those Bulls, and appreciate all your great focus on Bulls athletics. And go Bulls!